I live in a fairly politically active area. This means that during election season, some locals plant election signs in their yards and sometimes in other places. I like to think of the signs as fine examples of democracy in action. Some others call them visual blight. And it's possible to see the signs in that blightish sort of way without trying too hard. They're often boringly uniform in size and color combination. They're generally poorly made and aren't designed to stand the test of time. Sometimes only hope keeps the candidate connected to his clothes hanger type metal holding bar. The signs tend to be overwhelming when placed in a row, one right after the other, or when they're clustered together in a group. The in-row and cluster types are especially overwhelming when an election season ended, several days ago. Municipalities use that whole visual blight excuse when they attempt to restrict or remove political signs. Laws across the country have run the gamut from a total prohibition on political signs to restrictions allowing them on residential property only, to the number of signs allowed per lawn, to the amount of time a political sign can exist on a lawn both before and after an election. And the signs and those who love them don't always come away victorious. The pro-sign politicos argue that it's all about political speech. Such signs, they say, are the only means they have to influence their voting neighbors in a cheap, easy way. And courts often buy into that. The United States Supreme Court, for example, said that a very broad anti-sign ordinance in Ladue, Missouri, was unconstitutional because it hindered the residents' ability to use an important and distinct medium of expression. Besides, the justices wrote, residential self-interest in neighborhood upkeep should keep too many signs off neighborhood lawns. But the same high court 10 years before found that cities can restrict the placement of political signs in certain ways. It decided that it was perfectly constitutional for a city to stop zealous voters from posting signs in certain public areas, including wires that support telephone poles. The court found that keeping signs away bettered the quality of life and property values within the community and also prevented traffic hazards. If those two cases seem a touch incongruous, it's because the high court has yet to draw the precise line where the whole visual blight aesthetics and danger thing trumps the free speech thing. So cases of late in lower courts have gone both ways, sometimes siding with the sign putter uppers and sometimes with the sign taker downers. Much depends upon the precise wording of the statute at issue, mostly the stuff about where the signs can be placed and for how long. So this week, take in those political signs, be it in a pack-away sense or in a visual sense, depending upon your neighborhood. No matter which aesthetic you choose, it may be a sign that the Supreme Court will take up the signs issue yet again someday. I'm Amy Guida.